You've seen the Herald Sun today. You will be aware, fully aware, that it has been 10 years since the Essendon drug saga. A lot of coverage in there, a lot of information being rehashed today and some opinion. And a story with Danny Corcoran, which is a beauty too, from the Chief, Mark Robinson. But riding all the way through this, in and up to his eyeballs with all the information, all the dirt, all the analysis, was Mick Warner 10 years ago. He was a leading writer of the Herald Sun, one of the great journos in Australia, let alone Victoria. He's been good enough to join us 10 years on to discuss where it sits now. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Half. How are you, mate?
I am very, very well. Can you believe it's 10 years?
Oh, well, I can, actually. it's been a long haul, but actually 10 years tomorrow, of course, to the Blackest Day in Sport press conference, which you would remember, where the Gillard government minister stood up with all the heads of the big Australian sports in Canberra and told us that all of our sports had been infiltrated by crime gangs and full of performance-enhancing drugs, and that all the sports that we loved had been polluted. And, of course, it was complete crap, all of it, and the biggest stunt in years. And really, I think what unfolded at Essendon and Cronulla and other clubs was almost a bid to justify that press conference. You know, the weird thing about Essendon was that they'd come forward and self-reported 2 days before that press conference, which was a bid to sort of get ahead of the story. Now, there was a joint investigation with the AFL, but in many ways, Essendon had put their hand up before any sort of investigation had begun, which, when you think about it, is bizarre. And from that moment on, they couldn't really defend themselves. That was a strategy put in place. And so, yeah, 10 years on, we thought we'd go back and revisit it.
So, and one of the points Richard Ings makes, who was the former head of ASADA, which is now defunct, which I wasn't quite aware of, I must admit, about that, Mick, was that he says the process was convoluted, it was lengthy, poorly handled, all parties at various points. I believe at the end of the day it was a violation that was committed. So he says there was a violation. But he also says you don't get up and make these sort of announcements and allegations, and it was a damning announcement, if you haven't got the investigation locked and loaded. So they said, this is what's happened, now we're going to start investigating. Look, that was an unusual thing in hindsight.
Well, it was disgraceful, really, and very naive to think that you could accuse the most famous sporting club in the AFL, which is Essendon, you know, maybe, say, Collingwood, but they were such, when I was growing up, the arrogant sort of powerhouse, Manchester United. Their links went right through the game, including to the commission. So to accuse Essendon of that, without actually having any evidence at that point, which clearly they did gather. And as you say, you know, there are many people who say that the key was that there was no positive test, so they had to build a case on evidentiary. But, and as Richard Ing says, he thought the strands of evidence was there, others say it wasn't. But that was the folly to me of Essendon's decision to self-report. If they'd done what Cronulla did and say, well, that sounds good, but come and prove your case. Cronulla, of course, in the NRL, took 6-week penalties and won a premiership 2 years later. Essendon, even to this day, is still in the fetal position from what happened to them because they fought. And I don't disrespect the fact that they fought because, as I said, the investigation was compromised and corrupted and manipulated all the way along. But such a complicated story, the Essendon drug saga. Robbo and I did a podcast where I sort of described it as these rabbit holes that you can go down, and once you go down one, you never come out. So I tried to write a book about it and try to explain it, but it was just multi-layered, affected, you know, every level of the game.
And I remember that day vividly. I was on air on another radio station, and it was breaking through that morning, and you know, all the heads of all the big sports up in Canberra, it was AFL, the NRL, cricket, rugby, soccer, they were all there as part of this announcement that was the Blackest Day in Australian sport, as you say. It does seem a very convoluted, looking back now, obviously in the middle of it was a bit different, but looking back now, Mick, it does seem a very convoluted and orchestrated effort to almost take focus off something else. Was it a government issue that the main story was trying to get away from?
Yeah, well, I think that's exactly what happened at that point, is that the Australian Crime Commission had been investigating the importation of performance-enhancing drugs, you know, through to bikies and the like, and there was definitely issues that needed to be looked at, but I think they jumped the gun and my suspicion would be that politics got in the way. The Gillard government wanted to change the narrative, the national narrative, and they certainly did that. But even Richard Ng said that they really didn't have the information to justify doing that. And so on it went. And Essendon really fought hard. I felt that the AFL gave it some oxygen to Essendon in being able to do that in the way that they conducted themselves in the very early stages to try and get Essendon to self-report. And as Peter Scanlon, the former AFL commissioner, told me in my book, The Boys Club, that the AFL really underestimated the vehemence of ASADA because at one stage, I think the AFL thought that they could silo the penalties to James Hird and Mark Thompson and Bruce Reid and the club and protect the players. Really at the centre of all the AFL strategy was a desire, and you can completely understand it too, was to protect the TV rights. If you had no Essendon for 2 to 4 years, well, you had an Armageddon scenario.
Yep.
But in the end, the players did go down, didn't they? They got a 2-year ban and 1 year backdated and missed the 2016 season.
Do you think they'll ever get a chance to clear their names?
Not definitively, unless someone breaks ranks. You know, that's one of the things that you never know. And I think Robbo is more confident of this than I am, that there are people out there who feel uneasy. There are people who've never spoken, of course. So it's possible. In terms of the actual interesting side note we discovered this week is that the SARD has been able to keep the blood and urine samples that they took from the Essendon players for 10 years, but there's a WADA rule or a statute of limitations. They have to get rid of those pretty much now. So if ASADA was confident that they took thymosin beta-4, which is banned peptide at the centre of this whole thing, they now can no longer continue to test those samples. So look, I hope one day someone says something, but it would probably forever sit in the Lindy Chamberlain type. You know, we never really know what happened.
Could you have believed how big an impact it would have on the club at the time, even though we knew that obviously suspensions and years out of the game was going to be a problem? But as you say, they're still in the fetal position 10 years later.
Yeah, I probably can, because the way I look at a lot of these big clubs, and this was a phenomenal scandal, but when you look at what happened to Carlton in the salary cap crisis, took them,
yep.
Maybe they're still coming through it. Richmond in the early 80s, they went through their problems. When clubs get into these death spirals, you can't come out of them. And so I'm not surprised. The club was decimated. Some of their greatest people, as Robbo's reported on, the relationships that have been upended and broken, people who will never talk to each other again, who were great friends. I'm not surprised at all. But you get the sense that a new broom's coming through with Brad Scott and others. And it's those players too, Half, who were just tortured. You know, I say on the podcast, I don't think any of the players reached their peak. Maybe Joe did in 2012. But no, I think Essendon's got a long way to go and is still haunted by this, even though they deny that.
Yep, 10 years on, there's still pain being felt by the Bombers and for the ones involved, those players and staff in particular, and probably be lifelong, you reckon. It's nice to be able to relive a little bit with you today. I'm still reading the Boys Club. I'm going to get through that one day. It's a ripping read, Michael.
Slow reader, Half.
I'm a very slow reader. I jump in between books. I'm a shocker. But it's a great start, and I'm looking forward to the end of it, mate. Go well. Nice to chat.
Good on you, mate. Cheers.